The carbon tax debate is something that's like nothing I've seen in my time on this planet. It is the most emotive debate I've ever seen, and probably no debate has been surrounded by more misinformation. And my next guest is somebody that you've probably heard of, but probably heard more about what other people have got to say about him rather than what he actually says himself. So I thought we'd go right to the source and talk to the man, and his name is Lord Christopher Monckton, and he joins us on the line. Lord Monckton, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and good day, Australia.
Lord Monckton, as I said in my intro, most people have heard of you, but most people probably have formed their opinion based on what other people have to say about you rather than what you've actually said yourself. You've been called a climate change denier. You've been called a climate skeptic. What is your position on this whole climate change debate?
Well, as some of your listeners will have seen on the Press Club debate a couple of days ago, my main interest is in the science and economics of the climate and in making sure that various distortions of it, which have been perpetrated at official level, are nailed down so that they are not going to cause the huge economic damage that would result, for instance, from pursuing the proposed carbon tax or carbon action plans of your two political parties.
So you believe that both sides have got it wrong in this country?
Well, both sides are on the same side in that they're trying to say that the amount of carbon dioxide we're putting into the atmosphere is a problem. Of course, all we're really doing is putting back what was there before, and the trees and plants of the world are very grateful to us for that. And the only danger that it might represent, carbon dioxide, of course, isn't a pollutant. The only danger it might represent is that it might cause a little warming, but the amount of warming it's likely to cause is probably only around 1 Celsius over the next 100 years. That's not enough to cause any real problems. All right, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said it's more like 3.5 Celsius, and Ross Garnaut thinks it's going to be 5.1, sort of 50% above even the central estimate from the Intergovernmental Panel. But in truth, it's now becoming more and more evident by measurement and observation that the amount of warming we can expect is far, far less than has been predicted. Indeed, in the last 10 years, we've had lots of extra CO2 in the atmosphere and no warming at all.
Your opponents, or the people that are proposing this carbon tax, and people like Senator Bob Brown, the Prime Minister Julia Gillard, will say that they would rather listen to the overwhelming scientific support for their position rather than listen to you, which who would they would call a lone voice in the wilderness. Why are other scientists reluctant?
Well, if I were a lone voice, then that would be right. But anyone who has read the scientific literature on this subject realizes that science is not done and never has been by mere consensus or headcount. The fact is that only a few dozen people worldwide have actually studied the question of how much warming we're going to get from carbon dioxide to the level of actually publishing it in a peer-reviewed journal. I am one of them. And my conclusions, like those of most of the others who've done this by measurement and observation and the application of proven theory to the result, which is the way science should be done, are finding that the amount of warming we would expect to see is very small. Those who are doing it by modelling, sort of Xbox 360s and PlayStations, they are finding that it might be a problem, but in those models are built a number of assumptions which we now know to be wrong. So the conclusion is that I don't care how many scientists are said to believe a certain thing. I was classically trained at Cambridge, and we were taught that if anyone came to us and said we should believe something because there was a consensus, we should run a mile. That's not a valid, logical, rational, or scientific argument. It is a council of absolute sunken despair. If that's all they've got, then they ought to think again.
But if we believe what the Prime Minister is telling us, why have so many scientists come out in support of this theory?
Well, here you are, drifting back into the consensus again. I don't care how many scientists have come out in support of this theory. As far as I know, only a few dozen are qualified to do so.
Okay,
all the
others,
like, for instance, Professor Tim Flannery, your chief climate commissioner, he is not a climate scientist. Ross Garnaut, who has given economic advice to the government on this, is not a climate scientist. The head of the IPCC science panel is not a climate scientist. He's a railroad engineer, for heaven's sake. And I don't care how many of these people say that we're in for a problem, they are not qualified to make any such pronouncement. I, on the other hand, have sat at the feet of some of the best climate scientists in the world, and most of them are saying to me, no, of course the problem isn't going to be on anything like the scale that the IPCC is imagining. People of the caliber of Professor Richard Lindzen, the Alfred P. Sloan Professor of Atmospheric and Planetary Sciences at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He knows more about the atmosphere than anybody else alive. He says the whole thing's nonsense. You're not going to get that much warming. Professor Bob Carter here in Australia. Professor Ian Plimer here in Australia. Dr. Roy Spencer at the University of Alabama at Huntsville, who runs the satellites from which we measure temperature and other aspects of the atmosphere. His colleague, Dr. John Christie. Professor Ross McKittrick in Canada. I could go on and on and on. There's an enormous number of scientists.
Yeah, Lord Monckton, I'm not disputing your argument.
There isn't a problem.
Yeah, I'm not disputing your argument on that. I'm not disputing your argument in that regard. I'm asking you why have all these other scientists? What is compelling them to come out and say that the world is going to end tomorrow?
Well, I mean, you'd have to ask them that. I don't speculate, but certainly there is a financial aspect to this. Governments are, your own government, for instance, has promised a fund of $2 million in tranches of $250,000 at a time of taxpayers' money to any scientist who is willing to come out and produce propaganda in favour of the government's position. I think this is an entirely improper use of taxpayers' money, and I can't understand why somebody hasn't gone to the police about it, but that is what your government has said. And of course, if scientists are being invited to help themselves to taxpayers' cash in large amounts. I mean, there is Flannery working 8 months a year, 3 days a week, part-time, and getting $180,000 for straightforward propaganda, even though he has been found time and time and time again to have got his predictions wrong. You should start asking them why they're doing this, and I think you'll find if they're honest, they'll tell you, well, because it pays to do it.
Yeah, it's good money if you can get it. Lord Monckton, one of my criticisms of this whole situation is that I don't believe, especially in this country, we've been allowed to have the scientific debate to any level where anybody, I mean in the general public, is truly informed on this. But my question to you is,
I think is quite right, because your media are absolutely refusing to do the job properly. I had the privilege of taking part in a debate with Professor Richard Dennis at the National Press Club in Canberra a couple of days ago, where just about for the first time on national television, somebody on our side of the case was actually allowed to give scientific and economic arguments using science and numbers, which is the way science is done, how many beans make five. And this, as far as I can discover, is the first time that this has ever been done on national television in Australia. And of course the people are not being properly informed. What is interesting, though, is that the ordinary people, the left constantly underestimates this, and it's the left that are behind this climate scare, the ordinary people can smell propaganda 10 miles off. And the entire hysterical tone with which this propaganda has been conducted, the hysterical tone in which people like me have been attacked for daring simply to raise questions about the science and the economics. People can see straight through that. They have seen through it, which is why in a recent Daily Telegraph poll, 90% of those who responded said they didn't want a carbon tax. So despite the biggest campaign of expensive propaganda since Goebbels, your government and your mainstream media have utterly failed to convince the people. Now, why is this curious fact so? Because what they're saying is not true.
I wonder, and this was a position that I had before I looked at the results of the Roy Morgan poll, which gives the result, basically, of your debate with Richard Dennis. My question is this. I think this debate, because it's been stifled by the mainstream media and the government in this country, to a point, I think we've lost the debate. Should we be moving on and just conceding that we'd all like to have a cleaner environment and a cleaner atmosphere and just move on to ways of having that happen rather than keep trying to fight a debate that we seem to be losing?
Well, of course, I don't think we did lose that debate. Roy Morgan said we won it, didn't we?
Oh, no, that particular debate. I mean the debate in general.
Well, I've just given you the results of the Telegraph poll. 90% of the population is not buying the carbon tax. I would say that indicates we've won the debate as far as the general public is concerned, and we've won it hands down, and we've won it despite the mainstream media fawning on the Prime Minister of the day, and one of them even at the press club a week before I was there saying to her, please can you tell us in the media how to spread your message more effectively. When I was a journalist, that kind of brown nosing of the Prime Minister of the day would have led to instant dismissal. What has happened to your news media? They have become the poodles of the left rather than genuinely standing up and speaking out for the working heroes of your country. The mine workers, for instance, who dig the darkness underground to bring men light. The steel workers, the farm workers, the aluminium workers, the transport workers, all of whose jobs and families and lives and futures are directly menaced by this nonsense. And Australia, in the international business community, is now regarded for the first time in any Western country as a sovereign risk. Let me explain what that means. It means that your government is now regarded as so irresponsible in the economic sphere that nobody with any sense should dream of making any substantial investment here. Even China is now pulling her investments out of Australia in preparation for the collapse of her economy that will occur if this carbon tax and the mineral resources wealth tax are brought in.
Before I saw the results of this Morgan poll, I was of the opinion that everybody was firmly in one camp or the other, and you're never going to change their mind, but it would appear that you've changed the mind of 9% of the people watching the debate.
Well, Gary Morgan, with whom I lunched yesterday, made an announcement to the 300 people who came to the lunch saying that he had never seen so large a movement after one short debate in the entire history of polling. He said, apparently, this is very, very unusual indeed. He said if an advertiser had achieved so large a shift with one advertisement, that would have been the best and most successful advertising ever conducted in the history of advertising. I mean, he thought it was a very, very unusual swing. And I think the reason why this swing occurred is not because I'm a smarty pants, but because for the first time, many people in Australia who had never previously heard any of the arguments from the sceptical perspective were at last able to hear at least a condensation in just a short hour of the main reasons why it is that we are concerned that what we're told is settled science. It isn't and it can't be settled science, and every scientist now knows that. And so the propagandists for this issue, they know that they have lost. They know that every time they allow a debate with us, they are going to lose. That's why so very, very seldom is any of them willing to debate with the likes of me.
When I was at school, we were always taught that science was an exercise in scepticism. It was about questioning knowledge and proving theories rather than just accepting things on face. In fact, why has scepticism become such an evil thing?
Well, I think because so many people are making so much money out of pretending there's a problem with the climate that all normal rules of scientific discourse have been thrown out of the window. If we go back to the founder of the scientific method, Abu Ali ibn al-Hasan ibn al-Husayn ibn al-Husayn ibn al-Haytham, he was as proud of his lineage as I am of mine, and he was a philosopher of science and mathematics in 11th century Iraq, and they have his picture on all their banknotes. What he said was this. He said, the seeker after truth, which was his beautiful phrase for the scientist, does not put his faith in any mere consensus, however broad, however venerable. Instead, he subjects what he's learned to it, to his own hard-won scientific knowledge, to scrutiny, inspection, investigation, checking, checking, and checking again. The road to the truth, he said, is long and hard, but that's the road we must follow. There are far too many people in this debate not bothering to do science and doing propaganda instead because it's socially convenient, politically expedient, and above all, financially profitable. But science does not recognize consensus. It doesn't recognize headcount. It does recognize diligent measurement, observation, and experiment, and the application of previously established theory to the results. That's how science is done.
Lord Monckton, we're in a situation here in Australia where we've got a Prime Minister that's beholden to the Green Left. We've got an opposition leader who is too afraid to actually express the opinion that he truly believes, which is similar to yours. What do we as the Australian people do? How do we get ourselves out of this situation?
Well, I think you vote them all out and vote for the Democratic Labour Party, which I had the pleasure of spending most of the day with Senator John Madigan a couple of days ago. And he strikes me, the blacksmith by training, he strikes me as one of the most exceptional politicians I've ever met. The man is completely honest. And he has realised long since that this whole menace of the global warming scare is a direct threat to the working people of Australia, many of whom unwisely voted for the Greens or, still worse, for the Labour Party, and are now never going to vote for it again. And what he says is that he is the one party that is going to be willing to stand up in an unqualified way and say there is no need to do anything about carbon dioxide. Let us instead try and make sure that our workers' jobs and their futures are protected. And what I want to see your media doing is stopping this game of playing politics with of the left, and instead start realizing that the working people of Australia deserve a lot better than for your government to reduce yourselves to the status of a nation now regarded internationally as an economic pariah because of sovereign risk, and instead get back to pursuing sensible policies designed to ensure the future success of the major industries of Australia.
Lord Monckton, thanks for your time this afternoon.
And thank you too very much. God bless Australia.